Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth.
Hello and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back finally on a timely podcast for some sci-fi news. So let's get into it real quick. The big three topics. We got some bashing going on from Dan Aykroyd about the female Ghostbusters that came out last year. We have a new addition to the Legends of Tomorrow cast for season 3, which I am very excited. And then I'm going to be talking about the final episode and the season 3 of Gotham. So I'll be talking about all that in just a quick second. So this week we had some news about Dan Aykroyd, who served as a guest executive producer for the female Ghostbusters movie that Paul Feig had directed last year. So, and if you've listened to my commentary review of that movie, I didn't think it was a very good movie, despite the fact that you had a very eclectic bunch of talented actors that just never came together. And the cameos from the original Ghostbusters really never pulled it together. So, In light of what Dan Aykroyd had said, which I'll get into in a moment, I decided to rewatch the Ghostbusters movie. So I watched it, I think Monday or Tuesday night, and then the next day I rewatched it again, but with the commentary from the director and the writer. And there was mention about additional shooting of footage because of, they wanted to have, I guess, more evolution of the weaponry that they were developing for capturing and fighting ghosts. And when they talked about the Dan Aykroyd cameo, they thought how wonderful he was and how supportive he was of this movie. And actually, you know, when the movie came out, the trailer was like the most disliked trailer in YouTube's history, basically. But he came to their defense, and he said he saw the test screening of the new movie, and, you know, he said this had more laughs, it had more scares than the first two films, plus Bill Murray's in it. So, you know, he went in it as being really supportive. But recently, I guess some British talk show that he talked about how the reshoots that he had to do cost anywhere from $30 to $40 million, which is not the case, but only $3 to $4 million. But he also goes on to say that despite the fact that this movie cost too much, it's unlikely that we're going to see another Ghostbusters movie. And I agree that you should not do another Ghostbusters movie. And I actually was thinking about this last night. In light of properties like Twin Peaks or Game of Thrones or something that you can now bring to the small screen, I think rather than do another Ghostbuster movie, let's do a Ghostbusters TV series. Many of us, including my wife and I, enjoyed the Ghostbusters animated series. very enjoyable. So why is it that you can't do that on a smaller scale rather than have this one villain who is expected to bring upon doom upon the earth once again, and the Ghostbusters are there to save the day? Because it's repeating itself. But yet, you can do smaller stories, develop these characters, and give them a lot more screen time than you would be able to on the big screen. So, I'm not a true ghost head. I do love Ghostbusters. I like the first one a lot more than anything else. Second one was abysmal. And the female version of the Ghostbusters was a very missed opportunity to do something great. But it doesn't mean that I don't believe you can't do any more Ghostbusters. I just think you just should not do any more movies. I think you can spend the money wisely and have more fun telling who these characters are in a setting where there happens to be a world full of ghosts. So let that be more of a guiding force to vitalize and keep the franchise alive. So why not think smaller rather than bigger? So whatever the case is, I have to take issue with Dan Aykroyd, the fact that he came out supporting the film, and almost a year later is blasting the problem that him as an executive producer blasting Paul Feig on instructions, so to speak, on how to make the movie better. Well, which is it? Was it a great film when you defended it? Or was it a bad film all along and you just had to sell it? Because if you're an executive producer and you didn't have enough control over the director's final vision, then your name is on it, so you have no one to blame but yourself. You're passing this off to us. So I would have said, if you had an issue, you should have said something back then. But in any case, it's done. I did my part. I watched the movie twice now, actually three times. That's many more times than probably anyone else would ever want to watch this movie, because again, it's not funny. And it's disappointing all around. Again, every one of these cast members are fantastic on their own, and other Paul Feig movies are hysterical. Again, Spy, I think, was one of my favorite movies for pretty much all of his other movies. I mean, aside from Bridesmaids and, of course, Heat, they're fantastic female cast, but for some reason, this just failed to come together. I even watched the bonus footage in which they have the actors just spin off improv lines, and even that wasn't funny. So I'm not understanding what was the point of this if it just, again, I'm sorry, it just did not come together. And I tried to be open about it and bring this to an issue, but I think there was plenty to be blamed. But in order to go forward, let's look at what didn't work and try a different direction. So again, I'm offering two Ghostbusters TV series. This is now the perfect time and the perfect market to do something like that. Give us 13 episodes. I think that would work brilliantly. You know, do one large arc story, but you can break that up and give us some great comedy gold with these characters. That, I think, I'll be more excited about than seeing another movie. So, alright, so let's move on. This has me really, really excited. If you're a fan of Legends of Tomorrow like I am, Constantine was supposed to be there in season 2, and they promised, but I haven't seen him yet. It's okay. I'm hoping he'll be there someday. But the news came down is that we're going to get the mighty Isis. And as much as I love ISIS. This is when I grew up watching on CBS when we had Saturday morning cartoons. There was the Shazam and the Mighty ISIS Power Hour. So you had a half hour episode of Shazam, and then you had the Mighty ISIS. Now, at the time of this show, the personality that Mighty ISIS was inhabited was like a teacher. But she had big round glasses, her hair was in a ponytail, and she reminded me of my science teacher, Miss London, or Mrs. London. And, you know, growing up at a certain age, and you start recognizing the opposite sex, I couldn't help but to wonder if she was really the Mighty ISIS, but I had a crush on both of them. So, watching her on the screen, again, television was amazing. And the fact that now they're bringing her as a character for season 3 for Legends of Tomorrow, I'm like, is she even DC? And I'm like, I didn't think about this until my wife checked out a book from the library for free. Imagine that. I didn't have to work there for nothing. But the DC Comics Encyclopedia. And I completely forgot about this. 2005, she was part of the first 52 series in which there was a year without Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So other characters had to kind of come up through the ranks and take over and fill those roles. But I remember listening to the audiobook from Graphic Audio in which Black Adam had worked or used one of these the citizens and her brother, and I'm blanking out on the name, but her name is Zara Adrian Tomas. Her brother Omar, if I remember correctly, were in a war, but Black Adam saved them. So she fell in love with Black Adam, and he gave her the power of ISIS. And I think Omar became kind of like the Billy, the Shazam family, where you had the other lesser kid become another Flash version. Not Flash, another Shazam version, but this was like a Black Adam version, but a younger version. So I completely forgot, so I double-checked, and there it was. So, technically, she is a DC character. I didn't think about it back then, even though she was with Shazam, but it was official. So, in any case, I think that's fantastic that we're going to get ISIS. And yes, aside from what's going on in the world with ISIS, would this be something that could still fly? You know what? I don't care. Let this ISIS, the one's going to be on Legends of Tomorrow, be a positive image for that word. Because she represents the good part of being a hero and saving the world and being a Muslim. So if that's going to be part of the framework to develop this character, and we're going to be broadcasting this, there's no hiding about this, you know, about her identity or anything like that, because of we're promoting the negativity of everything that has to do with being Muslim, I want this to be a positive thing. So kudos to Mark Guggenheim and Greg Berlanti for you guys coming up with this decision to go forward with this character. Again, it's near and dear to my heart, and I could not be even more happier with what's going on with Legends. But man, this is going to be kind of great. I'm really, really excited to see what's going forward. And this is some great stuff. I'm sorry, I'm just gushing because I have such a love for the Mighty ISIS. All right, so enough of that. So let me go ahead now talk about the last episode or the last two episodes of Gotham and season 4. All right, so the last two episodes of Gotham, we are dealing with two episodes back to back called Destiny Calling and Heavy Dirty Soul. All right, so basically we have the virus that has been released in some kind of a train station, Victoria Station, I think. I'm not sure where, but that virus, the tech virus, has now been released. So chaos is going everywhere, and Gotham is going up in flames, so to speak. So it's kind of interesting how everything's going in. The other thing that I'm stressing about was that Dr. Tompkins, who's Lee, has the virus, wants Jim to have the virus, and the episode prior to the two-parter, prior to Destiny Calling, he does inject himself with the virus. So he's been fighting it on and off, in which he uses it to his advantage, and then he tries to bring it down so he can retain his humanity. That whole storyline between the two of them got really ridiculous to me. I understand where Lee was going with her motivation and why she wanted the virus, but to have Jim also be infected with her, it didn't work at all for me, because again, at the very end, Bullock gave Jim the badge to remind him about what he is, which is a good cop, but behind the badge were the two doses or the two antidotes to be injected for Lee and for himself. And then in the end, she winds up leaving yet again. So I'm kind of done with their relationship. It kind of seemed as if it was going back into a love-hate relationship, but Lee was getting really dark and really hateful against Jim. And it's understandable, but I think at this point, between the two of them, that character and their story arc is best to just leave it be. So, talk about let's leave it be. Fish Mooney comes back, and I'm not crazy about her at all, especially for her attaining powers through Hugo Strange's tampering. So at the end of season 2, she gets powers, and she kind of comes back a little bit in season 3, gone for the most part, but comes back in the last, second to last episode, and then dies before the final episode. But honestly, her relationship to Capture Penguin and the kind of, it seems like they were reconciling, and I didn't understand why, considering their history together, it didn't seem why she would care that she's at her time of her death, she's just saying to, you know, make Gotham your own or something to that effect. I'm like, it really bored me with her back. First season, she's fantastic. I love Fish Mooney. And Jada Pinkett herself, like I said, she's channeling this whole Eartha Kitt vibe, and she eats up every piece of dialogue. Every word she speaks, it's so poetic, and I love that about her. But at this point, that character is like long gone, and there is nothing left other than it's now dead again. So I'm like, whatever. And then we have the whole thing about Bruce following the young yin-yang, whatever building that he is told to go to. And there we get Ra's al Ghul, played by Alexander Siddig, who, if you know who he is Dr. Bashir from DS9. He was also in Game of Thrones. So he looks great. He looks perfect for the part. My only question is, like, so where's Arrow and Flash, you know, to kind of fight this guy? It'd be kind of cool they did. You know, like, didn't we kill you? It's like, no, this is another Earth, you know. But nonetheless, Ra's looks like he's going to be coming around big time in season 4. And then Bruce, because he's still under this whole mind control, winds up stabbing Alfred. But luckily, right next to where he got stabbed, it seems like that was a Lazarus pit, because he uses the water to help cauterize the wound, and even though he gets him to the hospital and he has to be hospitalized, he still survives. But then Bruce himself has a bit of a change in himself, so it seems like because of he was able to box his feelings about the death of his parents and literally lock it away like the pearls, he's able to move past that pain and grow from that point on. So, and this is kind of jumping to the end, but at the very end, we do actually get to see a scenario playing out in which there's a couple and a child going down a dark alley, and a robber is there, but Bruce, who we later see, was all dressed in black, stops the crime. And we see him on the very top of the roof, and he's looking out to the city, he takes off his mask, and it's young Bruce. So there's the payoff. As I said in the very beginning of when I did the opening podcast for Gotham, is that it is a slow burner, but there is a reward at the end. And finally, we are getting Bruce moving into the direction of becoming the protector of Gotham. Is this going to be Batman Year One? I don't think so, because he's still way too young. But still, he has a ways to go. And I thought, fine, I'm happy with the way things are going, and that's fine. The one thing that wasn't crazy about is that Selina Kyle winds up getting a whip from, and I forgot the actress's name, but she winds up getting a whip and she practices it, or she whips a bottle, and she seems like she's a natural at it. So we got the kind of beginnings of Catwoman, which is what we wanted all along. But I think about two or three episodes before we get to the season finale, I was really ticked off because the Bruce clone pushes Selina Kyle out of a window, and she basically looks like she fell to her death. Right? Wrong. She's surrounded by cats, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, don't. Please don't do Batman Returns. Because if you remember that movie, Selina Kyle was pushed out of a window, thought for dead, and then all these cats came along and started nibbling on her, and somehow she has powers. She has 9 lives, and she can do all these great acrobatic stunts. So that didn't happen. But I'm like, please, she doesn't need to be powered. You know, whatever the case is. The whip was good, so she whipped it good. So we had that. The whole thing with Penguin and Riddler, their fight back and forth was fantastic. I love that. And the fact that Mr. Freeze, not Freeze, was there to ice the Riddler. Basically, he put him in carbonite. So now the Riddler is on ice like Han Solo. So Penguin kind of won that round. The worst part that I hated from this episode was, again, we have Barbara, who looks to be, from what I've been reading, is going to be Harlequin for next season. And honestly, she has just been lingering around way too long. And I thought, please, let's just end her character altogether, but this is what's going to happen, is that she's going to be that creature. And then Butch gets shot, but he's going to be in a coma. Imagine that. You can get shot point blank in the head, but he's going to become Cyrus Gold. So, all right. So, on the whole, this was okay. I wasn't crazy about it all the way through. I think the virus went way too long. And Dr. Tompkins, you know, being injected, the only way you know that she's now the bad is because her hair got straightened out. She has very heavy eye makeup on.
And, of course, we see a lot more cleavage. And that's how you know she's evil. Whereas Jim doesn't have to do that. So that's kind of a double standard there. I think the mayor storyline for Penguin was a bit of a stretch at the beginning, but that kind of came and went. So I think the Riddler romance with Penguin was kind of weird, but it just shows how connected they are. No matter how many times they try to off each other or one-up each other, they're more connected to each other than they even realize. So I kind of love that about them. So was it a great season? Compared to season one, which was perfect, this was okay. We do get Bruce that much, you know, one step closer to becoming Batman. But again, there's a lot of things we can start cutting down and focusing on doing better story times. Because the whole, we got way too many characters. And I think it's best to retire some, bring some to the forefront, like Poison Ivy, who was great. Yes, they did age her quicker, but it was fine. So in the context of the story, not a problem. So I'm looking forward to season four, and let's see what happens with that.
All right, so that's going to be an end for this Sci-Fi News podcast. So again, you can follow me on the various social networks. You can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. So as always, thank you very much for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast, Sci-Fi, from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.